I think he's a great communicator. He's a charming guy. I like him very much. He's a good friend of mine.
He's a good man. He's a good candidate. He'd make a good president. I'd be the first to say that.
Oh, what fireworks. Senator John Kerry and John Edwards complimenting each other at Thursday night's Democratic presidential candidates debate in Los Angeles. NPR senior news analyst Dan Schor joins us now. Dan.
Morning, Scott.
Morning, and I want you to know I think you're a great communicator, great friend of mine, and a very good man.
Oh, Scott, I think you're pretty good, too, if a little young for such responsibilities.
Thanks. As we note, Senator Kerry, Senator Edwards, and the Reverend Al Sharpton and Dennis Kucinich all debated Thursday night. What did you notice? Anything that surprised, struck you?
Well, surprised, no. They were painfully polite to each other. If you can speak of anything as changing, trade has emerged somehow as a big issue between them, with various gradations of do we revoke trade agreements, do we renegotiate trade agreements. But that's a way of talking about the jobs issue, which is apparently the big issue. Mm-hmm. So other than that is Senator Kennedy. There's a wish for fulfillment.
I was going to stay away from that. Senator Kerry, I suspect you
yes,
meant.
Yes, exactly. Senator Kerry touts how experienced he is. Edwards is very charming. Mm-hmm. Each one says that he is more electable than the other. But, you know, that after if nothing very radical happens on Super Tuesday, mm-hmm. One can say it's almost all over in a nomination.
Mm-hmm. When one says they're more electable than the other, but the other guy is electable too, as far as they're concerned.
Well, that's right.
Yeah, just by a couple less points. Big political news that began the week was Ralph Nader's announcement that he is running for president, this time as an independent candidate, not Green Party candidate. This created some consternation and some interest.
Yeah.
What's your assessment now as to how Mr. Nader's candidacy might affect the race?
Huh. I think it depends in the first place on whether Nader can still get on the ballot in some of the key states like Florida. It's also important that Howard Dean this week has urged his followers to stand behind the Democratic nominee. Had Dean tried to take it out on his own loss and give the slightest nod to Nader, that would have been almost catastrophic for the Democratic nominee. And just generally speaking, Scott, it doesn't somehow feel like the year 2000 when Nader clearly got enough votes to call score the election. It doesn't have to be that way this time, I think.
President Bush unveiled a new speech this week that seemed to take aim, that did take aim at Democratic contenders, particularly John Kerry, although the speech did not mention Mr. Kerry by name. The first public pronouncement that the president has made as a candidate for re-election. Mm-hmm. What do you make of the timing that this speech is delivered now?
Well, you know, it used to be it was after Labor Day when you really started the campaign. They've moved it up a great deal. It clearly indicates that the White House feels stung by some of the things being said by the Democratic candidates and decided that it was really time to try to answer back. Well, the president did not mention any names, but the attack was clearly aimed at Kerry, saying that this Democrat would stifle business, would weaken American defenses, and so on. Mm-hmm. That indicates, I think, that they are a little bit nervous about Democrats and about Kerry in particular, who was shown in opinion polls as beating President Bush if the election were held today, which, of course, it isn't. Mm-hmm. So we get another debate tomorrow, CBS New York Times debate tomorrow, and on to the big Super Tuesday.
The Fed chairman, Alan Greenspan, told the House Budget Committee on Wednesday that he believes the best way to reduce the federal deficit is to keep the president's tax cuts, but also to cut spending on programs such as Medicare and Social Security. Now, this is something that nobody holding public office and certainly nobody running for public office likes to do. What are the alternatives?
Alternatives? Well, if you're going to go ahead and as the president proposes, make permanent the tax cuts, which would give us a budget deficit, says the Congressional Budget Office, of $1.75 trillion in the next 10 years, there are only two ways to approach it when your deficit is too big. Mm-hmm. One is to spend less, and the other is to tax more. Mm-hmm. And this is clearly is not something that the president wants to do in any event. So the position that Greenspan is taking is one way of doing it is by cutting back on Social Security benefits and ages of eligibility. Well, you'd say Social Security And at the White House and in Congress, they run away because that's the famous third rail.
Democrats don't want to cut Social Security either.
No, they don't want to cut. Nobody wants to cut Social Security, but Greenspan says you may have to.
Yeah. Gay couples continued to get married in large numbers in San Francisco this week. And there were also, I believe, a couple of marriages that were sanctioned in New Paltz, New York. This is the week that President Bush endorsed a constitutional amendment to ban gay marriage.
Yes.
Do you believe that this campaign in behalf of that amendment is going to pick up steam around the country?
No, I think it's already fast losing steam, if I can put it that way. This was clearly meant as the president making a gesture to his religious conservative base, who were very unhappy with him because he had not yet taken a position on gay marriage. Now the president says all he wants to see is a dignified debate on the issue. He really isn't pushing very hard for it, nor is Congress. In Congress, they're acting as though they wish the thing would go away. They don't want to talk about it. And I do think that that almost a week after he has said he is for a constitutional amendment, you're beginning to see signs that whole idea is moving away.
Two reports sanctioned by the Catholic Church were issued this week, and they suggest a wider epidemic of priests involved in sexual misconduct over the past 50 years than had been estimated. I believe they say more than 4,000 cases of priests abusing minors, 4,000 instances of priests abusing minors in more than 10,000 cases,
right.
And that was just reported.
Right.
And the report took bishops to task for not acting on family complaints repeatedly over the years. Are these conclusions going to mollify, satisfy, reassure so many families who have been affected?
Well, not
this?
Entirely. If you hear what the organization called Survivors Network of Those Abused by Priests are saying, if there are 4,000, they would like to know who are they? What are their names? They want to know if offending priests are still living anonymously among them. I think while the bishops have gone very far, they have not apparently gone far enough for those who were hurt by this.
And of course, unrest continues to escalate in Haiti. Rebels are reportedly closing in on the capital, Port-au-Prince. American and French officials called this week for President Aristide to resign, step away from power. Pentagon, I guess, is on the verge of sending three warships carrying about 2,000 U.S. Marines into the waters off of Haiti. How do you foresee events there this week?
Well, it's only a matter of how far the chaos goes and whether or not Aristide does leave. If he doesn't leave, and you get continued chaos, and you'll get continuing efforts of hundreds of thousands now of refugees to try to come to the United States, creating an enormous problem in what to do about them as desperation increases there. What is at stake here for the president, other than the fact that his brother is the governor of Florida, is that it calls attention to the markedly different way that this country treats fleeing Haitians and the way it treats fleeing Cubans. And now, of course, at stake is whether the U.S. can assemble a coalition of peacekeepers for Haiti after long being scornful of the idea of coalitions. You remember when the president was saying, we don't need permission slip to defend America. Well, now they need an awful lot because the United States doesn't want to go in there alone. It looks very much as though there'll have to be some kind of intervention. They say only after there's a peace to keep. That may not last very long.
Okay. Thanks very much, Dan Shore.